Welcome, Impactful Parents. It's time for the Impactful Parenting Podcast, where I give you parenting tips and resources to make you a more impactful parent to your school-aged child. I am your host, Christina Campos. Welcome, parents, to the Impactful Parents Inspire and Learn series, where real parents come on and tell their stories of inspiration and learning. Because a wise man learns from his mistakes, but a wiser man learns from other people's mistakes. And today we're going to learn from our guest speaker. His name is Mr. J. He is a relationship coach. He is an author of a children's book. He's a public speaker, but more importantly, he is an adoptive parent. And so I invited Jay on today to talk about his adoption experience. And it's a little bit more unique because Jay is also a same-sex parenting partner.
Thank you for having me, Christina.
How did this all come about? Obviously, you got into a relationship and then you've decided that you wanted to be parents. So let's start there.
Okay, well, I'll fast forward the very beginning, but I will say when I was in my 20s, I lived in upstate New York, and I always had a passion for film and television. So I told myself, after I get my degree, I'm going to pack up and I'm going to move to the big city to pursue film and television. And that's exactly what I did. I got my degree and I packed up all my stuff and I moved to the big city, New York, to pursue film and television. And I was pursuing film and television. Actually, I was doing some great things. I recorded a dance album. I was performing. I was on Sex and the City and Criminal Intent and doing all these things. And before you know it, I was like, ooh, I think I have feelings for somebody. So without realizing it or what have you, next thing you know, I'm in a Ryder truck moving down to Georgia because the person I was dating got into law school. So it was never in my life plan, but yet then again, many things aren't people's life plans. So here I am in a Ryder truck moving down to Georgia. And okay, this was never in my plan. But we're in Georgia, and I was, I'm a certified special education teacher, or I was prior to what I'm doing now. And so my spouse at the time was a law student, and I was teaching. And after a couple of years of that, he actually took me to Italy. And we went to Rome, we went to Florence, and then we went to Venice. And it was the last night in Venice. We were walking down one of the alleys, and it was so beautiful and so romantic. And he took out two rings, and he got on one knee, and he asked me if I would make him this happy forever. So after some tears and emotions, I said, certainly, I'd be foolish not to. And it was pretty much right after that, we started talking about a family. We talked about surrogacy. We talked about, in vitro, we talked about, but, you know, we decided there's a lot of children out there that basically just need love in a bedroom. Obviously, a lot more than that, but that's the fundamentals. And we could have done surrogacy. I mean, just because you're gay doesn't mean your stuff doesn't work. But so certainly we could have done our own children biologically, but we just figured there's so many children out there that just need love in a home. And so that's what we decided to do, is go the adoption route. So you first have to do what's called a birth mother letter. And basically, this is a letter from you to a potential birth mother who is going to choose you to raise the child that they gave birth to. And I'm going to tell you something. One of the most difficult things was the salutation of that letter. How in the world do you address a birth mother? What do you say? Dear friend? Dear, like what's the salutation you say?
I wouldn't even, you're right. Like, you don't think about that stuff.
No, dearest, future, who knows?
Yeah.
So anyways, basically, so that's what we did. We wrote a birth letter, birth mother letter. And then we had to put together what's called a birth mother book. And that's basically, you know, this is me. This is how I was raised, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then my spouse, Eric, had to say, this is me. This is how I was raised. And then the next page is, this is how we are. And this is what we like. And this is what we want to do for our family. So anyways, we made a couple birth mother books, went to the adoption agency, And we were told, you know, thank you for the books. Now pretend you never applied, because you could get a call from us in 4 months. You could get a call from us in 4 years. Mm. You don't know, just be prepared. So you kind of just like are going on with your life, anticipating any day the phone's going to ring. And that's precisely what happened. I came home from work one day, and the social worker at the adoption agency called and said, Jason, are you home? And I said, yeah. She said, is Eric home? I said, yeah, but you're scaring me. Get to the point. She said, are you sitting down? I said, oh my gosh, what's going on? Seriously. And she said, we do have a birth mother who we showed 13 books to, 13 birth mother books to. You guys were number 11. She said, after she turned to the first 3 or 4 pages, she closed your book and said, this is the family I want to go with. She said, so if you guys are available, this was on a Wednesday. She said, if you're available tomorrow, she would like to meet you. So I said, oh yeah, we'll cancel whatever we need to cancel. So we met our birth mother on a Thursday. And long story short, we were in our first sonogram with her the following Tuesday. And we were in every doctor visit thereafter until she went into labor. Now, our birth mother for our first child did not want to know if she was having a boy or a girl. She did not want to hear the heartbeat. So every time we heard the heartbeat, we were wearing headphones. She needed to emotionally divorce herself from the whole pregnancy process. And her adoption plan also included when the baby was delivered, take it immediately out of the delivery room. She didn't want to hear the baby cry. So she was 7 months pregnant when we were chosen. And so immediately what we did was we put her own phone line into our house. That way she could call us whenever she wanted to, and we can talk and converse and get to know one another. We were in every single doctor visit with her, and to the point where when the doctors would ask her a question, like, do you want vitamin K in the baby's eyes? Do you want the baby to be circumcised if it's a boy? Do you want whatever the question was? She would say, ask his parents, and point to us. So when the night she went into labor, we were there. And it was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful journey. I was helping her breathe, pant lightly. Eric wound up cutting the baby's cord. And that was that. We 2 days later.
All the great daddy duties. You were there.
I know. I know. So 2 days later, we all hugged and kissed and cried and went our separate ways. And it was a relatively closed adoption.
Is that a very typical process for the adoption experience?
So not really. Unfortunately, now all the rights come down to the birth mother and the state she's in. So if the state mother's in Pennsylvania, it's going to go with the Pennsylvania laws. If the birth mother's in New York, it's going to go in New York or Idaho, yada, yada. So basically birth mothers have what's called a rescinding time and or a revocation time. And that all goes with the state they're in. So you can be in one state where the revocation time is 72 hours, and they can be in a state where the revocation time is 30 days. So once you bring a child into your home, that birth mother can change her mind a month later. And here you were planning the marriage, college education, you know, the whole nine yards, and the birth mother revokes, you know, her, your rights. And that does happen. Now, obviously that's not exclusive to any same gender couple. That's just, you know, any couple at all. Another thing too, is the majority of adoptions nowadays, and it's a big, heavy push from the agencies, are open adoptions. They really do like open adoptions. Now there's studies pro and con. I think the majority of the, and people may disagree with me on this, but the adoption agencies, more so focus on the studies where an open adoption is beneficial for the child. You know, I will say both our kids, both birth mothers have our information, and they're welcome to reach out to me for any reason or at any point. They don't ever, but they are welcome to, just like the reason I wanted to have their information is if our children ever had any questions for them, I wanted to be able to reach out to them. But I'm not into, you know, hey, Sunday dinner, your birth mother's coming over, you know, like that wasn't my thing. That could be a thing for somebody else, and that's wonderful. That didn't work for our family. So we were blessed that it's a relatively closed adoption. It's technically called open with limited contact. That's the technical term. But no, that's not, that's probably about 20% of adoptions at this point. The rest are relatively open in some capacity, whether it's phone calls, letters, visits, the whole nine yards. But we had none of that with our first child at all. Now, I will say, just to correct myself, because we put in a phone line for our son's birth mother when she was 7 months pregnant, for 2 months, we were talking every night. I know her favorite dessert is peach cobbler. I know she doesn't like bananas. I mean, like, I know so much about her. We went out to dinner every week with her. We brought her to the movies. So she does reach out to us about every year and a half, every 2 years via email, but it's never about our son because she doesn't know our son. She'll just reach out and say, hey, I was thinking about you today. Hope things are well. What are you guys doing? Because we had a close relationship, an intense close relationship for those 2 months, but never about the baby because she never experienced him in any capacity outside of the delivery day, of course.
And your second adoption, how was it different?
So we were living down in DC for the first one. And I always wanted to, quote, come back home, which is upstate New York, after we had our child, because I was born and raised with a very large family. I have 113 first cousins in my area. And growing up, I loved being with my cousins. They were my friends, my family, you know, they occupied pretty much my life. And I wanted my kids to have that similar experience. I'm very, very close to so many of my cousins now, and they know so much about me. So there's just such a comfort level there. I wanted my kids to have that same experience, especially now that all of my cousins had kids and they're around my kids' age. So we moved back to upstate New York. We went with an adoption agency, but after about a year and a half, we were getting no calls. And when we would call the adoption agency, they would be like, I'm sorry, adoptions are down all over. You know, it's going to be a while. Well, our son was like going on five and we're thinking, geez, you know, I don't mind a little bit of a gap in age, but I don't want a huge gap in age. I want my kids to grow up together. So I started looking into the fostering program, and it was more specifically the foster to adopt. Well, my spouse was not on board at all. My spouse was like, well, I don't really want to see these kids coming in. And then I get close to them and then they leave. It breaks my heart. I don't know if I have the emotional capacity for that. And I said, I understand. And, you know, so we talked about it and we talked about it. And it was probably a good 6 months before I finally got my spouse on board. And that's what we did. We went into the foster program. But halfway into the program, our social worker said, if you guys are looking for a baby, then I would stop right now. You're not going to find a baby with a foster program. You might find a child who's 5, 6, 7, or 8, you know, that's going to come with maybe some attachment concerns, but it just doesn't happen with a baby of the foster. But we said, that's fine. We're still going to move forward because at this point, now we were actually invested in actually helping foster kids, not just, you know, our own self-serving needs to have another child. We now were on board to help kids in the foster system. So we decided, you know, move forward. It's extra pokers in the fire. If something pans out with our adoption agency, we're still there. If something happens with the foster adoption, wonderful. If not, we were still going to have foster kids. And not only would that help with the kids in foster homes in the foster system, but we also wanted to show our son what it's like to help other kids and to show him how blessed he was. He lives in a very nice, big, beautiful house with a big, beautiful yard, a pool, a loving family. We want him to know he's very blessed. A lot of people, you know, don't have a lot of the things he takes for granted. So we went through the intensive 11-week course of foster to adopt. And we did take on some kids all along the way. But we got certified in late August, and in the beginning of September, we got a call from the hospital. They said, hey, we have a little girl here. She was just born. Her birth mother signed her rights to the hospital. If you guys are interested, she's yours. So we're like, yeah.
Wow. That is awesome.
It was amazing. So we immediately went upstairs and changed our son's nursery from all blue, talk about stereotypical gender, all blue to all pink within 45 minutes. Grab that, run to the store and get this. It was all pink. So we go to the hospital, mind you, with our son and three foster kids. we go to the hospital and I'm holding my daughter. And it was, parents are watching this. They understand that, that moment that you're looking down on cloud nine. I mean, you know, your life is forever changed. And she is a girl and our life has forever changed. Let me just tell you, girls are a whole another species. She's my heartbeat, but Lord have mercy. Yes. Yes. If she was our first, I don't know if we would have had a second. Although I love that. Yeah.
People say that all the time.
She's seriously my heartbeat. She really is. But you know what's interesting? And I know all kids are different, but like when our son was younger, he would say, I want a drink. Now I'm Papa. My spouse is Daddy. So Daddy, Papa. So when my son was young, he would just say, I want a drink. So either I would get it for him or Eric would get it for him. A drink. That's it. Case closed. When our daughter wants a drink, she wants it in the cup she wants with the top she wants on it, the specific drink from who she wants the drink from. It's like, whoa, you can't just have some orange juice? Come on. But so anyways, 3 months later, we were finalized in the courtroom. Our birth mother was there. She was beautiful. And what was interesting is the birth mother to our daughter is half Irish and half Filipino. And my spouse is Filipino and I'm half Irish.
Oh my gosh.
So it just worked out like amazingly. About a month after our son was born, we did talk to the birth mother of our son. And after talking to her, I said, do you have any questions for us at all? Because trust me, if I were to give a child up for adoption, I would have a mile long list of questions I would be asking. So I asked our son's birth mother, I said, do you have any questions at all for us? And she asked us one question. But this is what's interesting. Fast forward, after our daughter was born and we went to court to finalize our adoption, we talked to our daughter's birth mother and I asked her the same question. I said, Julia, do you have any questions for us at all? Any questions you want to ask us? Do you know she asked the same exact question?
And what was it?
Our son's birth mother? Do you have any guesses?
Are they happy?
What did you name the baby?
Oh, what did you name the baby?
That was their question. Not your religion. Are you going to beat this child? Like nothing, you know, just what's your name? What did you name the baby? So, but I just thought it was interesting that both of them had the exact same questions. So I was like, okay, interesting. So obviously we told them the name. And what's ironic about our daughter's adoption is after court, her birth mother didn't have a ride home. So I asked the judge if it would be a conflict of interest if we could bring her home. And the judge had to go through the, you know, the court mediator and the attorneys and all this other stuff. And then we were approved that we could drive her home. So during that half hour ride, I asked the birth mother all these questions, medical history, you know, you name it, height, weight of, you know, both birth parents, blah, blah, blah. And before she got out of the car, she said, I just want to let you guys know that after I leave your car, you will never hear from me again. I won't bother your family. But for any reason, if you ever need to reach out to me for any reason, I am here and available for you guys. And I just thought that was awesome. So we hugged and that was that. And now our daughter is going to be 5 next month.
Wow. That's a great, great adoption story for both. I got tons of questions for you now about a few things. Sure. My first question for you is actually about the foster to adopt. So that I'm familiar with. I actually have been through that also. I never ended up doing foster to adopt at the very end for reasons that, well, personal reasons, we were ready to also go and have a baby. We were trying to get a baby also. And then my mother got sick again and it was very sad. Yeah. Yeah. Cause she had cancer. So I just didn't think I could do both, take care of my mother and sing, but I am familiar with that process. And with that process, a lot of times those children come with some ailments that you have to deal with right away, even as infants, because something was maybe not quite as it should have been inside of the pregnancy. Did you see anything like that or have any worries about that in general?
So this is what's interesting. So when we asked our birth mother about our daughter, you know, how was your pregnancy? She told us, she said, I never knew I was pregnant. She said, I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and my bed was soaking wet. She said, so I called my best friend and I said, I think I'm pregnant. I think my water broke. Can you take me to the hospital? And her friend took her to the hospital and the doctor said, yeah, you're 4.5 centimeters dilated. We need to take you in. So because of that, obviously there was no prenatal care. Obviously there was no care as far as what are you eating? What are you ingesting? What are you, you know, so there were some concerns. Now our daughter does have some very, very minor, and I mean very minor sensory issues. She did need some speech. She went from understanding her 5% to now understanding her 95%. So there was some things that we noticed and we addressed early intervention. And we were told by all the experts that we took her to, from child psychologists to the OT to the speech therapist to you name it, that by the time she's in first grade, she'll be off all of her OTs, her, you know, and now it's a matter of just her dealing with, you know, the cards she was dealt with, because we're all dealt with cards. I mean, I grew up with ADHD. I mean, you gotta.
Oh yeah. No, Mike, I have children with sensory processing disorder and I took very care of myself during my pregnancies. So, I mean, sometimes things just, that's just how it is. You're very, very lucky regarding her health and things like that. I just want to be realistic to people who aren't familiar with the foster to adopt process, whether you are, it doesn't matter what kind of couple you are. If you're going to go into that sector to get your child, just being very honest and aware that parents, it's not always the easiest way to go, but it is some of the most fulfilling ways to get a child. And you're very fortunate. So that's awesome. My next question to you is, during those adoption process, if there's any same-sex couples that are listening to us right now, did you feel like you were treated any differently through that process than another type of couple, or, you know, was there any difficulties with that? Would you give any recommendations to anybody who is a same-sex couple that's listening to this right now and wants to adopt?
Yeah. You know, very good question. Thank you for asking it. I will say this, yes and no. The only times now let me just say that we are a Christian family. We very much are, you know, Bible believing, God fearing, family. So it was slightly disheartening when we went to some of the, religious, adoption organizations, and they said they couldn't work with us. Now having said that, there were people within the agency that you could tell their heart was bleeding. And they were saying, listen, me personally, I would love to give you the first child available. It's just the guidelines in which the organization we work in doesn't allow me, whatever. Now, having said that, I also reluctantly respected that decision. You know, rules are rules. And I want to respect that. I do believe in, you know, not to get all political, I do believe in religious, you know, liberty and things like that. And I want to respect whatever. Now, does my heart break because I think that their mission statement should be a little bit more broadened? Absolutely. I want to tell you something, Christina. When we went, when we were doing a little research initially, before we even went into adoption, we heard that one of the social workers at one of the adoption agencies, when she would go to find children in China, she would first start with looking in the dumpsters because that's where they were going to find the little girls. And so it broke my heart that some of these organizations that were religious would rather see children in dumpsters than with a loving same gender family. Now, moving on to the agencies that did accept, you know, same gender couples, absolutely not. I personally did not have any feeling, any notion. Of course, I'm a big believer. I have a psychology background. I'm a big believer in what you look for, you will find. So if I looked for discrimination, I'm sure I would have found it. But personally, I didn't feel any, I didn't sense any in any capacity. And to be honest with you, I think for every reason why one birth mother would not choose you, another birth mother would. Our first birth mother said her best friend growing up to this day was a gay male who would be the best father. He was the best friend. He's an amazing human being. She said, so the reason I chose you guys is because you're a same gender couple. So the same reason somebody wouldn't choose you would be the next reason somebody would. So just to answer your question, no, I didn't feel any discrimination, except for, like I said, when we sought out the organizations that were more aligned with a religious institution.
Now let's get to today as a same gender parenting team. Are you feeling that discrimination now? I know that parents can be very, very judgy at schools. And, you know, let me just preface this by saying parents in general, it's a tough place to be because I feel like there's a lot of judgment going on for everyone, not just the same gender partnerships, just about everybody. It's the bar set so high and everybody's got an opinion and everybody's going to voice it. How do you feel today about that?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. Now, we have a couple of friends who have experienced blatant statements from people. Never have we at all. Now, it's funny because sometimes we'll be somewhere and you will get a sense where you're a little, especially because our son is half black. And so sometimes it's like, well, wait a minute. Okay. A same gender couple, transracially adopted. Do you guys know how to do A, B, and C? Yeah, I mean, like, there's all the. But I think it's more out of a quest of questioning or inquisitive. Maybe it is judgmental. I just am not the person that goes there. But I will say what's interesting is that sometimes it's feast or famine. Sometimes you're looked at a little judgmentally. And other times you're almost looked at as a hero, like, oh my gosh, you guys are the coolest. We're going on 20 years of marriage. So it's like, oh my gosh, you guys are like the, you know, you won the gay marriage lottery and the family, like, you know, 20 years of marriage and raising these kids and doing your thing. You're almost looked up to, you know, as like this hero status. So with some people, you're almost glorified in a sense. And then with other people, yeah, maybe you are looked down on. So, you know, I think we're on the spectrum.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear. But congratulations on 20 years of marriage, by the way. That's a feat in itself.
So it is.
Congratulations to that. I really applause to you.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you what I think maybe parents out there listening to this might be thinking. And that is, what do you do on Mother's Day?
Okay, so this is what's interesting on Mother's Day. You know, let me just preface before I answer. Let me just say this. We're not the crazy gay couple that, you know, are easily offended at all. We're not the crazy gay couple that's going to storm into a school and say, why did you do A, B, and C? And we're a gay couple and you better, you know, A, B, and C. Nothing like that at all whatsoever. And the reason I say that is because we did have one incident, but that was just because it wasn't intentional. And that's our biggest question in all areas of life. You don't look at behavior, you look at intention for the most part. So for Mother's Day, our son has a very, very close relationship with his grandma. So for Mother's Day, he can focus on something for his grandmother. He can focus on something with his many aunts. He can focus on something. So, you know, for Mother's Day, you can absolutely focus on any other significant female presence in your life. Now, whatever he wants to do is fine. If he wants to celebrate Papa on Mother's Day, fine. If he wants to celebrate Daddy's on Mother's Day, that's fine. Although we don't do that. Mother's Day to us is kind of like Hanukkah. It's not a part of our family. We don't celebrate it. We honor it. We know other people do. It's just not a part of our family. So the one incident I will say, and again, it wasn't intentional, so not a big deal, is it just so happened that our son last year had a substitute teacher on the day they were making Mother's Day gifts. And so he was an older gentleman. And so he told Luke, our son, why don't you go play on the computer? Because we're going to make Mother's Day gifts. And that was a little disheartening because you never want your son to ever feel, you never want your kids to feel, you know, not included in something. But we didn't make a big deal out of it because it wasn't intentional. He was an older teacher coming from an older generation, and he was a substitute teacher. So not a big deal. But yeah, they can, there's many things to do on Mother's Day. But we don't, again, not to beat a dead horse, it just like Hanukkah or all the other holidays that don't apply to us, it just doesn't apply to us. But let me tell you something. Father's Day, it's a double big bang.
That's fun. That's awesome. And I love how you compare it because I think it's very relatable to everybody because there's a million other holidays out there that we don't celebrate that we honor as people. And we just, I get it. It's a great way to describe it. Going to your son, what happens when somebody says, do you have a mom and how do they feel? Do they get a stigma at school or anything like that? How do you react to that?
Yeah. You know, I always try to teach my son, don't come from the place of a lack, come from the place of abundance. So when someone asks about your birth mom or mom, whatever, you very confidently sit up straight, take a deep breath with a smile and say, I have two dads. Simple as that. So it's not a, no, I don't have a mom or whatever. Now, if the conversation gets, more open or more intense or whatever, yes, he's very happy to say, I'm adopted. I do have a birth mother. She's in Maryland, but I have two dads.
And have you come across anything with either children just not feeling apart? I know as kids get older, they just want so much to be like the group.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. And hopefully I don't bore you with my response. I'll try not to, but you know, I am a life coach. And one of the things I tell my people all the time is we live in a very couple centered world. You go to the movies, there's couples, you go out to dinner, there's couples, you see on TV, there's couples. So just like we live in a very right-handed dominant world, you know, when the manufacturers of a refrigerator put a handle on, they're going to put a handle on for somebody that's right-handed, a door right-handed, the desk and school right-handed. Well, we also live in a heteronormative culture, heterocentric culture. So the cartoons they see, the movies they watch, the magazines they read, the whatever, it's very mom and dad centric.
And you're a very unique family. I mean, not only are you adoptive and you're same sex, but like you said there, you got multicultural, multiracial.
You
have a lot of things happening with you guys.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so my spouse was born and raised Roman Catholic. I was born and raised Pentecostal Protestant. We've had to merge that. I mean, yeah, there's a lot going on in our family. So yeah, you know, there are times when our son won't come to us from, again, not won't come to us from a deficit standpoint, but will just, you know, if he sees a movie or watches something, he might come up and say, hey, what was my birth mother like? But so I don't think it was necessarily, I want a mom. It was, what was she like? Because that gets him thinking. But again, it's because we live in a very mom, dad centric world, you know, where that happens. But I will tell you one time my son was playing, this was about a year and a half ago. He was playing and with a bunch of kids that really didn't know us well at all. And I was in the other room working and out of nowhere, one of the kids who comes from a mom and dad home said, man, you're lucky to have two dads. I wish I had two dads. So, you know, again, I think with all family dynamics, it comes with its blessings and its burdens.
Now, in the adoption realm, a lot of families do a gotcha day. And I heard that you don't celebrate gotcha day. Is that right?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's one of my pet peeves. And I know that if anybody's listening right now, especially that I've adopted, they're going to say, I can't believe this guest doesn't have a gotcha day. So a gotcha day, for people that may or may not know, is the day in which you adopted a child. And it's to make them feel special. So basically, if you were adopted on October 3rd, every October 3rd, you have a gotcha day. Well, I got thinking about that for a while, and I thought to myself, man, if you were to ever make, in my opinion, so people listening, don't hate me, if you were to ever make a child feel different, that would be one of the reasons, in my opinion. That's all, just my opinion. If you want your children to celebrate Christmas, if you celebrate Christmas with a family, wonderful, they have a birthday, you want them to feel as much like the average kid as possible. And the average kid doesn't celebrate a gotcha day. They celebrate their birthdays. Now, somebody listening could be like, well, they're not your average kid. They're special because they were chosen. And that's wonderful. If that works for you, great, fine and dandy, more power to you. But I will say, I also have a couple of adopted cousins. And a couple of them, now they're older and they have kids of their own. And I asked all of them, did you guys celebrate a gotcha day for the ones, and then for the ones that I knew celebrated a gotcha day, I asked them, what did you think about that? Every single one of them said, it just made me feel different. None of my siblings ever celebrated a gotcha day, but here I was. I just wanted a birthday, just like my brothers and sisters. And I was at that point where I said, you know what? This might work for other people. And if it does, you know, more power to you. I'll celebrate with you. It's just not going to be a part of our family.
I'd like to close by any last thoughts, words, suggestions that you might want to give anybody who's listening, who is somewhat in your shoes.
Just know that every single family, like I said before, is going to have to navigate something, whether it's, you know, concerns or struggles with their children over whatever it is. So just do you. And the biggest thing is to feel confident in who you are, because I always say out of 100 people, there's going to be 40 that love everything you do, 40 that hate everything you do. And then there's that 20% wiggle in the middle. Just do you. The best you are to yourself, the best parent you can be to your kids.
I love it. That's a great way to close. And if people are resonating with your story and want to know more, reach out to you, contact you, you are a relationship coach. How would they get a hold of you?
So I have a website. It's very simple, MrJRelationshipCoach.com. And there's all my social medias, my Instagram, my Facebook, you name it. I also have a book on Amazon. It's called I Am Loved Right Where I Am. And it's about no matter what kind of family you come from, whether it's a divorced family, you name it, a single parent or a foster parent or you name it, you are where you're supposed to be and you are loved. So I do have a book on Amazon, I Am Loved Right Where I Am. And like I said, MrJRelationshipCoach.com. And I'm thrilled to answer anybody's questions for your listeners. No problem at all. Happy to.
And your book, is it a children's book? Is that what it is?
It's a children's book. It's geared towards elementary school. Believe it or not, I wrote it before I even had kids. Because when I was a teacher, I worked in inner city schools. And we had no money at all for books. And there were 90% of all of my students did not have a mother and a father in the home. They came from different family dynamics, but none of the books reflected that. So I was in the teacher's room one time complaining. And as I'm complaining, it hit me, duh, how about you just write one? And that's what I did.
That's awesome. Well, go check that out, parents, and contact Jay if you'd like to reach out to him. And if you have an inspiring story and want to share your story with the audience so that others can learn from you, please go to theimpactfulparent.com. It's my website. Go to the Work With Me page at the bottom. There's an opportunity to sign up because we want to learn from you too. But until next time, you got this, parents. We're just here to help. Thank you for listening today. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast with a friend. And don't forget, the Impactful Parenting Podcast is an extension of the Impactful Parent community. So go to the Impactful Parent website and sign up for a 30-day challenge, browse the free resources, or register for the weekly newsletter so that you don't miss a parenting tip that can help you and your family. Thanks for listening today, and go to theimpactfulparent.com. See you next episode.